time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. Dialogue Conspiracy number 225, July the 10th, July the 11th, 1976. Or is it the 12th? Maybe it's the 12th. If we're dating this, I dated it the 11th. It's actually the 12th. Well, we'll get on with more facts than losing a date or two. The largest part of the program this week is going to be devoted to the ever common premise that I have through my broadcast, that crime really does pay, political crimes pay, and covering up political crime certainly pays, specifically the covering up of murders and the rewards of those people who do the covering up. Richard Nixon was removed from office as President of the United States along with his palace guard for covering up the Watergate, but nobody has been charged really for the high increase of evidence that murders were committed. And the cover-up not only continues, but all those persons who had a finger in covering up the chain of command of the murders, with the exception of Jimmy Carter, are placed strategically at the conventions that are coming up, the Republican and the Democratic conventions. Gerald Ford, you know, was running for President of the United States. He was on the Warren Commission. He also was part of the Watergate cover-up, and he received this prime appointment from Richard Nixon because of their involvement, I'm positive, in the Kennedy assassination, and was called in to the Watergate story. Ronald Reagan, another candidate for president, has very strong links to the intelligence community, and he's protected and catapulted into power because of these various political assassinations that preceded him. I'd like to do one show just on Ronald Reagan today, but mostly I want to talk about their selections for vice president, because that'll take up the bulk of the time, specifically Senator Frank Church, who is one of the seven that Mr. Carter's considering. This program will be sent to other stations, and by the time they receive it, the selection will be made. But I hope and pray that Senator Frank Church isn't one of those that has been selected, isn't the one that has been selected by Jimmy Carter. And then Ronald Reagan has said that he would like Senator Howard Baker or John Conley or Secretary of the Treasury William Simon as his running mate. And the connecting link to this that I want to talk about at length is that Gerald Ford is also considering John Conley. He's one of the most important men in the clandestine espionage operations of this country, and both men want him as a running mate for the same reasons. He's a connecting link to what preceded us years earlier. I hope many of you are taping these shows on reels or cassettes. I get letters and phone calls from people who are or have missed certain shows. I speak rapidly and change names often, but it's good to have these and play them back later. Remember the situations. I hope you remember to get your tape cassettes. The Watergate story I did for Midnight is on the stand in Carmel here for one more day. I don't think it'll be out next week. It's called The Watergate Curse, 30 Dead Since Watergate. I did several hours show in Milwaukee this morning. I've done many radio interviews on these Midnight articles from the House, and did one with Milwaukee, and the last one was Kansas City. The Watergate deaths have been concerning a lot of people, radio people, and you can still get them today or early tomorrow morning if you don't have it already. There are many good books out about political assassinations and sources of material where I get my material from. There's a bookstore in Capitola that carries almost every book that's available or in print on political assassinations or conspiracies, and if you write to me or telephone me, I can give you the name and address, and you can write to him or go there and put on order books that you need or buy the ones that you want, because many of these good books that I built up in my library, I bought just when they came out, like many books that are out at the present time, and then they soon go out of print and they become impossible to obtain. Last week I spoke briefly about a missing person on the Monterey Peninsula, Michael Bone. He disappeared June 16th, and I was concerned about the circumstances of his disappearance. The local police have done nothing so far, and they have not contacted the party closest to Michael. Although she has spoken to them about this, they seem to be doing nothing. I called the Monterey Herald to see if they'd run a story or a description, because this wasn't an ordinary kind of disappearance. So far, there's silence in the community, police, and news media, and we will go further on this story. If any of you know him or know the name, Michael Bohn, B-O-H-N, an artist, a cartoonist here at Monterey Peninsula, you can contact me here at KLRB or at the house. I want to talk, as I say, about the political campaigns coming up. I did want to share one thing with you which I thought was rather amusing. If you watch President Gerald Ford last week with Queen Elizabeth, they had a grand ball at the White House, and the two of them danced. The first dance was televised quite at length, and the two of them tripped around the floor, and the title tune selected for this great occasion was The Lady is a Tramp. I don't know if the Queen recognized the song or not. She didn't look very happy about the whole situation. Very inappropriate, but no worse than Bob Hope telling jokes about urinating in Abraham Lincoln's hat, which was under the bed upstairs. The entertainment was very bad, but I thought it was kind of funny. The President of the United States dancing with Queen Elizabeth to the melody of The Lady is a Tramp. One of my listeners here at KLRB called me last week and asked if I would do a broadcast about Native Americans, specifically the killing of American Indians, the leaders, the long trials, the imprisonments. I cover a wide range of conspiracies and articles such as the one on the 30 Watergate deaths. And I will do a 45-minute segment, maybe in a few weeks or in a month, in near future, directed on this specific problem. I've talked about the killing of Black Panthers, and I don't think I've spent one entire broadcast on the harassment and killing of Native Americans. The information that I have in my files has accumulated over the years, and I do save articles about the operations against these people. The first Indian leader in the USA that I noticed was a victim of the notorious FBI counterintelligence program was the death of Richard Oakes, Indian leader. He was shot September the 20th, 1972. Oakes, you remember, led that uprising at Alcatraz Island, and he wanted for an Indian stronghold. The Indians were turned away, and now it's just turned into a commercial venture anyway for tourists from San Francisco. Go over there, it's a tourist trap that we could have done without our usual commercialism, but we couldn't even share that windy, foggy rock with a few Indians. Mr. Oakes' child fell and was killed there, and then he was killed, and when the men were tried on his murder, they were both acquitted, and Mrs. Oakes had screamed at the time of the trial, and the men who did the murder, one of them was quoted as saying that the law enforcement people condoned this at the time, and this was a quotation, it was open season for coons and Indians. Coons meaning black persons, and the law enforcement laughed. There was a weak prosecution, and the men were off. Another murder, the kind that I have in my file, was August 19, 1975, a man named Clayton Hurst, member of the Blackfeet Indian tribe. He was in a jail in Montana and was hung under mysterious circumstances. They said he'd commit suicide. The family, after the burial, disbelieved the autopsy. They had a second autopsy, and they found out that Hurst had died before the hanging ever took place. And the original cause of death was electrocution. And the third kind of death, which I have in my files, because I run into many, but I just thought I'd mention the kind of information I do research, was Anna Mae Aquish, the American Indian Movement activist, who was buried after FBI officials claimed that her death was caused by overexposure. February 24, 1976, she was found dead at the Oglala Sioux Reservation, South Dakota. Again, some Indians did not trust the FBI in their official explanation on the cause of her death. And like Hurst, they exhumed the body, and they found that Anna Mae did not die from overexposure at all. She died from gunshot wounds in her head. There were holes, bullet holes in her head. And then she was left out to be exposed, but exposure wasn't the cause of death. The FBI had lied about the cause of the death. Their lies protect the killers. It gives them an excuse to close the investigation. The Justice Department Criminal Division is now reviewing the FBI negligence. If you've been reading the newspapers lately, the FBI are being investigated by the Justice Department at the very highest levels of the FBI for continued burglaries after they said they ended when J. Edgar Hoover died up to the present, for one or more kidnappings the FBI has done, and for other crimes such as ruining property and destruction of property that wasn't called for. Clarence Kelly says he won't resign. He has no intention of resigning, but the FBI has been involved in these activities. But here is a clear-cut case of an autopsy where the FBI lied, and this goes back to the John Kennedy assassination. Again, if you can lie about the autopsy of the President of the United States, the people in this country, you can lie about a woman like Anna Mae Aquash or you or me or anybody else, and the agency should be held accountable. Now, Senator Frank Church is the first man I'm thinking about who is even being considered as a vice presidential possibility, because Senator Church was called to the Cedar Rapids, Iowa this week to testify in a trial where two American Indians are being charged with killing two agents of the FBI. What Church testified was that certain Indian groups had been targeted for surveillance, such as the American Indian Movement and the Black Panther Party. Both groups have been riddled with murders. There have been at least 26 deaths of Black Panthers, and I have not added up in my files the amount of Indian deaths. These aren't haphazard killings. They were part of a concerted plan of combined efforts of the CIA, the FBI, police, and National Guard. But Senator Church went to testify, and he admitted that his select committee, which just ended in May so that he could try to run for president or vice president, had not investigated the involvement of the FBI into American Indian affairs because, said Frank Church, in quotes, we had to be selective. Senator Church is described in the book Who's Who in the CIA, page 102, as having trained in Army intelligence, working for the Anti-Communist Crusade for Freedom, and then going to the Senate from there, the United States, with a background from the Central Intelligence Agency. I give the page number 102 because last week, on Dialogue Conspiracy of the week before, I mentioned Bill Moyer of the Central Intelligence Agency, and some persons in New York at WBAI jumped up and were concerned because they think that I link too many people to the intelligence community. But the fact remains that the reason these investigations are not being done properly, even though the evidence is there, the bullet holes and other evidence of homicides is right there, is because the investigators are linked to the intelligence community that is being named as being responsible for the murders. Now, Jimmy Carter's considering vice president. As I say, I don't know if he'll choose him or not. But one of the qualifications for Frank Church is to become vice president of the United States, like Senator Howard Baker, or Gerald Ford to be president, or Ronald Reagan, who was on the Rockefeller Committee to cover up the CIA assassinations, is their ability to cover up illegal domestic operations of the Central Intelligence Agency. Church proved his way of covering up information when he investigated the FBI and the CIA and the John Kennedy assassination, and he's moved up the ladder by proving how he can cover up. Senator Church also testified in Iowa that he said we were concerned with determining the truth of the allegations of improper activities of the FBI, but, in quotes, we did not pursue the Indian matter, however it was raised. Now, that goes back to the same mentality that was written in Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn, I forget which book it was. I think it was Huck came home and they said, what happened today? Was there any excitement? He said, oh, nothing happened. Some guy killed, but he was only a nigger. Nothing happened today. And that's the mentality that hasn't changed that Mark Twain and Clemens saw a long time ago, is the mentality, if it's only Indians or it's only blacks, we don't even go into it. So that while the FBI is being investigated in a court case in Chicago for the killing of Fred Hampton, while he was given drugs and doped by the FBI and then shot while he was asleep and couldn't get himself up even to defend himself, and while in February the FBI is being accused of lying about autopsy in the Indian affairs and in murder where they lied about an autopsy, that was in the domain of illegal domestic activities of the FBI and the CIA, but yet Frank Church said we had to be selective, so we didn't go into it, and the Indian affair was raised, but we didn't pursue the matter. This is what I call crime paying or cover-up paying, because nothing can be so flagrant as his testifying that we could have done it, but we didn't choose to, and leaving it there. And yet, the Frank Church Committee, the Intelligence Committee, spent weeks trying to find out if there was a plan to kill Castro, and Castro's still alive, meanwhile ignoring the people who've been killed. And then they spent weeks trying to find out whether Lee Harvey Oswald left a letter with agent FBI, James Hosty, who's now stationed in Kansas City waiting for the Republican convention to arrive. And even though James Hosty testified that he destroyed a letter that allegedly was given to him by Lee Harvey Oswald after John Kennedy was killed, and this was the question of the President of the United States being killed, Hosty was not prosecuted for destruction of evidence, and nobody in the intelligence community from Watergate, Dallas, John Kennedy assassination, any of these murders, none of them are prosecuted for destroying the evidence that would solve these crimes, and the commissions that look them into them just take at face value that this document was destroyed, that was destroyed, and yet the people heading that commission move on up to a position of power. And the important man that I really would like to go into at length is John Conley, because Ronald Reagan stated this weekend he would take John Conley as president, vice president, and there's a lot of pressure on Gerald Ford to take John Conley as president. Barry Goldwater has given him a half-assed endorsement. I endorse Gerald Ford, but take John Conley. The powers in be that wanted Agnew in office, that wanted Richard Nixon out of office at the end of Watergate, that have used Jerry Ford as a holdover, just like Lyndon Johnson was, until Nixon could get into power again, want John Conley in the White House. Senator Howard Baker was also named by Ronald Reagan and Treasury Secretary William Simon. Reagan realistically stated, "I don't believe in the old tradition of picking someone at the opposite end of the political spectrum because he can get votes you can get." Because Reagan knows that that's good life insurance, to keep someone in who's just like you. There'd be no reason to kill you if your vice president is like you. If there's a big difference in policy and you kill the president, then the vice president goes off on another tangent, such as the difference between John Kennedy and John Conley. Now, why are Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford both in love with John Conley? This link goes back to a long career of covering up. Ford and Conley had a career in the investigation of the John Kennedy assassination, in the murder of John Kennedy. Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission that is now falling apart. The truth of this document is just being torn to shreds and should disqualify the man for being even a candidate for President of the United States. Even though he was appointed by Nixon, we wouldn't have to vote him in. John Conley, as the governor of Texas, was responsible for keeping all the loose ends of the Dallas police and any investigations in Texas together. He worked with CIA Director Leon Jaworski of the Houston CIA Anderson Foundation and appointed Leon Jaworski to represent the state of Texas at meetings of the Warren Commission. I knew for years now that John Conley would get himself into a position ready to run for president or be appointed as vice president. The clue to John Conley's power walks around with him day and night. It's a question of some particles of metal. You don't have to have a photographic memory or documents, because lodged in the leg of John Conley are possibly more pieces of metal than actually came out of bullet 399 that was found whole on a stretcher at Parkland Hospital, where John Conley and John Kennedy were taken as patients. A pristine bullet was found with no blood or flesh on it. It was planted on a stretcher and hardly any particles removed. And yet there are particles in John Conley's leg greater than removed. And that tells you that as long as those walk around with him, John Conley has a lot of power. Conley testified before the Warren Commission that a separate bullet hit him than hit John Kennedy. And this is backed up by photographic evidence that confirms it. The doctors of John Conley knew that there were different bullets in his chest and wrist and leg than the one bullet that went through John Kennedy's back and came out at his Adam's apple at his throat. This clean, bloodless bullet was planted on a stretcher. But if separate bullets hit John Conley and John Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald couldn't possibly have fired that many shots with the kind of weapon he was using in 6.5 seconds. So a second gun was used. There was no lone gunman. There was a conspiracy. And the cover story, lone gunman, no conspiracy, has held together because John Conley has these particles in them to at any time break the story. I'm sure they could be tested in some way. But if not, he still knows what went on. And he, other than saying it was a different bullet hit, he has not pressed the issue of opening up who killed John Conley. Also, John Conley has something in common with Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission, because he was Secretary of the Navy along with his successor, Fred Korth, who then became Secretary of the Navy. And both knew Lee Harvey Oswald was in Navy intelligence. And during the years preceding the Kennedy assassination, Oswald's role in the Soviet Union was under Navy intelligence. The circumstances of Connally knowing the Navy connection, the ballistic evidence, the photographic evidence, is very important. Now, there's only one thing that could stop John Connally's power, possibly, at this time. There are many things. There's investigation into the Vesco affair, the Watergate milk funds, his operations with H.L. Hunt down in Texas. He's been named in a lawsuit there that was hushed up and paid off. There are a lot of things in John Connally's past that could stop him from becoming vice president or president of the United States if they were pursued. But there's nothing so damaging as those terrible White House tapes. There's one thing in the way of John Connally and Ronald Reagan, with these men running for office, and that is the tapes that belong to Richard Nixon that are sitting in the White House at the present time, watched by Mr. James B. Rhodes, the archivist. The full story of the John Kennedy assassination, or even hints of it, could be told in Richard Nixon's conversation, and it can end the political career of many people. You remember at the time of Watergate how nervous Richard Nixon was after his arrest. He wasn't concerned on the tapes about the entry into the Democratic headquarters at all. He said that what gave him the anxiety went back to the Bay of Pigs. And all of us know that whatever happened at the Bay of Pigs is public knowledge. History books have it. John Kennedy took the blame. The operators are all named. There's no secrecy to the source of funding, the planning, and everything about it, even Richard Nixon being charged with the operation with E. Howard Hunt. Bay of Pigs translated the various researchers, and the way Richard Nixon talked about it means the killing of John Kennedy. And while two of the nine tapes disappeared and only seven were produced, 18 minutes were erased from one of those tapes, I'm sure that the story of the Bay of Pigs, the anti-Castro Cubans, Richard Nixon, and the covering up of the John Kennedy assassination would give a hint of some of these people, and particularly John Connally. John Connally could worry about the CIA money that had to be hidden by Gerald Ford when he went to the Wright-Patman Committee and said, don't go into the Houston money, because the CIA money, the same funding that went into the Watergate, went into the John Kennedy assassination through the CIA Foundation that Connally knows very well and worked on down in Houston, Texas. Charles Colson, who was Richard Nixon's attorney in the White House at the time of Watergate, the man who hired E. Howard Hunt to do dirty tricks for Richard Nixon for his 1972 election, was the one man who coaxed John Connally to switch from Democrat to Republican and to join their team. Charles Colson wanted Connally to get on the bandwagon at this time and join their team. And this is important because later Charles Colson brings in Gordon Nobel, who worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, to erase those tapes that could possibly have some interest to John Connally. And I'm going to read you some information about Connally's anxiety about getting rid of those White House tapes, the same tapes that Richard Nixon doesn't want us to see, and certainly not till after the election. Robert Haldeman wrote an article two weeks ago, a series in the New York Daily News, and he said the next president of the United States shouldn't be Ronald Reagan or Gerald Ford, but should be John Connally. And then in the same series of articles, it was a three-part series, John Haldeman, who believes that John Connally is the man that should be president of the United States, says that Connally telephoned him and begged him to destroy those White House tapes. That doesn't disqualify John Haldeman from thinking Connally would cover up information or evidence any more than Richard Nixon had to get out of office for covering up Watergate. Connally called Haldeman before Richard Nixon was out of office and begged the president to convey the message, which they did to Mr. Haig, for Richard Nixon did not destroy the tapes or couldn't get his hands at them. But Connally wanted them destroyed. And here's some remarks that Haldeman wrote. This is the Universal Press Syndicate, June 20th, 1976. How desperate John Connally was to have the White House tapes destroyed. And there's another article, June 22nd. They're in the New York Daily News. These are direct quotes. John Connally, who knew of my close involvement with the tape system, strongly urged me that should the opportunity arise to convey to the president the subject of destroying the tapes. There's only one course for the president to take. He's got to destroy the tapes. Connally said in his firm, decisive way, what Richard Nixon should do is take all those tapes in the Rose Garden, carefully guarded, of course. Then the president should soak them with gasoline, call the press corps out, throw a match on the pile, and explain the validity of his acts. Now, if the White House tapes meant so much to John Connally, who's now a lawyer in Houston, Texas, and retired without any taint of Watergate or the John Kennedy assassination, they were also important to Charles Colson, as I mentioned, because Charles Colson then is responsible for destroying the tapes. And one of the persons he called in, he arranged, was Gordon Novell, who works for the CIA, who describes himself as one of the top 12 men of the CIA. It was considered a position when Mr. Bush was selected. He considered himself a nominee. Charles Colson calls Gordon Novell to come to the White House and erase the White House tapes that were then secured by guards with some kind of a complicated radar instrument to wipe out the sound. Novell recently told Lillian Castellano, a fellow researcher in Los Angeles, that the reason they didn't wipe out the tapes was because John Dean and Maureen Dean already have copies of them, which also leads one to wonder the power of John Dean and his wife to gain access to these tapes. Now, Gordon Novell and John Connally's lives cross over and mingle in other events than the Watergate, where John Connally wants the tapes erased and Gordon Novell was supposed to do it. They cross over at the time of the John Kennedy assassination, and they cross over now with the Howard Hughes story, which gets more tangly and complicated because Gordon Novell has on the board of director of four of his electronic companies the gentleman Noah Dietrich, who would be the executor of the Howard Hughes estate. Now, this gets tangled in litigation, and I want to make it as clear as I can that Ronald Reagan is running for president of the United States and would like John Connally as his vice president. John Connally has links with Gordon Novell going back to the Kennedy assassination, and Novell, with the White House tapes, also works with Noah Dietrich, and the man who manages Ronald Reagan's campaign, and I'll go to him at length, is a Mr. Lizalt, Senator Paul Lizalt, who brought Howard Hughes to Nevada to buy up the gaming tables and the interest there. John Connally was in the office of the Mormon Church when this notorious forged planted document of Howard Hughes was attempted to be passed off as the first and real will of Howard Hughes. Noah Dietrich would inherit the job as executor of that multi-million-dollar estate. He works with Gordon Novell, and here's John Connally at the Mormon Church at the time when a second piece of evidence is planted and forged. The first planted evidence was the bullet at Parkland Hospital. John Connally didn't put it there, but he was involved in a series of linkages of the intelligence community where a will is found in the office of the Mormon Church, where a bullet is found in a stretcher. In the instances of the Kennedy assassination, the Howard Hughes story, and the Watergate, Gordon Novell is a connecting link. There's a reason that Gordon Novell is important as an electronic expert and useful to these men if he's possibly able to erase these tapes. I have an article here from the Los Angeles Times, a UPI story dated March 28, 1976. It says, Washington, the Watergate tapes may self-destruct unless something is done to save them, according to the U.S. archivist James B. Rhodes. In an affidavit filed in the U.S. District Court, 42 million pages of documents and 920 tape reels from Nixon's presidency should be moved to a vault with temperature and humidity controls. It is considered my professional opinion that the persistence of the condition increasingly threatened physical preservation of these historical materials. The weight of boxes strapped on pallets crushes the boxes to the bottom. The tape recordings have not been rewound in so long a period are in danger of deterioration. He proposed that they be put in security classified vaults. Now imagine the Mormon data banks in Salt Lake City are kept in special temperature, special handling, special control of the genealogy of all of us existing on planet Earth. And yet these important tapes are kept in a worse condition than we keep our own tape libraries at home, where tape recordings at radio stations and home libraries last for years and years, and yet it's 4 years since Watergate. And we're told by the archivist that they're in a physical condition where they're being allowed to deteriorate. And if they're kept in that condition where they're allowed to, there's no saying that one of Gordon Novell's four electronic companies can't get in there, and that Mr. Archivist Rhodes is telling us already to be expecting them to deteriorate. He can come out later and say, see, I told you we didn't preserve them right. But maybe they're left there for the purpose of being destroyed, and if they were in safe vault, these electric firms couldn't get to them. And maybe the reason they are allowed to be in this condition is that they're meant to be destructive. Gordon Novell and John Connolly, lives cross and mingle with regards to, again, to events that are tangled, as I say, down in an area down the Tyrol Club in North Jamaica, where allegations of the planning of the Kennedy assassination took place. John Connolly has a private residence there that he flies to, that Tyrol Club. Friends of Lee Harvey Oswald, Marina Oswald, live and meet there. It's a tightly guarded compound, the former home of Ian Fleming of British Intelligence, who wrote the James Bond series. Before he passed away, his home is down there. And people directly involved with Lee Harvey Oswald, the Kennedy assassination, and an organization called Permandex. It's been the Permandex Foundation that has been the funding of the John Kennedy murder. There have been many allegations to bear this out, and Robert Murrow, formerly of the CIA, in his book Betrayal, talks about the Permandex Foundation. He talks about Albert Osborne, who got money from the Permandex Foundation, who went on the bus trips with Lee Harvey Oswald to Mexico, and there's documents that Osborne met at Jamaica, the same place where John Connolly lives, where Ian Fleming and American and British intelligence are concerned. But also Albert Osborne worked in New Orleans with the Permandex money where Gordon Novell worked. And the point of the story is that Gordon Novell and John Connolly and Connolly's residence in Jamaica and the Permandex Foundation, and then transferring back to Salt Lake City where John Connolly is visiting when the will is found, and Noah Diedrich working for Gordon Novell. If you chart it out and diagram it, which I'm sure you can't do because I'm running the names pretty fast, the main impression I want to give you to remember is that John Connolly wants those tapes burned. Somebody working in the White House wanted them erased. Gordon Novell seemed to be the person that would want it done. And I think this is important, that the campaigns are coming and that a man that both Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan want as vice president or consider as vice president should be thoroughly investigated, and the tape should be listened to, and all of these allegations that I'm making that have documents with them should be brought up to congressional committees, and the vice president shouldn't be handpicked in Kansas City, and we have to live with that while this evidence is locked up and we can't get it out to the people. Jim Garrison, the district attorney for New Orleans, wanted Gordon Novell to testify at his trial against Clay Shaw. He alleged that Clay Shaw was part of a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. Novell went to Virginia. He fled, then went to Ohio, where Governor Rhodes, I call him Governor Kent State Rhodes, refused to extradite him for questioning. He said he belonged to the CIA and was protected. He is protected. He was arrested recently for possessing, allegedly having firearms at the time of the Mardi Gras. Those charges were dropped. I believe that there was an implication that he would blame terrorists and that he was still into counterintelligence activity. This intricate link, which I tried to simplify, but it's impossible to simplify it too much, from the suppression of the CIA involvement in the killing of John Kennedy on the part of John Connolly and Gordon Novell with their intent to destroy evidence that might link both of these men to the killing of John Kennedy, then to the Watergate exposures, gets complicated, as I say, when you then get to the Ronald Reagan campaign with his connections to the mysterious Hughes Empire. Because as we see, one of the people that helped cover up the Hughes connections to Watergate, to Richard Nixon, to Bieber Rosa and Rosemary Woods was none other than Senator Howard Baker, who Richard Nixon appreciated, I'm sure, because Nixon got out of office for covering up a little bit. But the real story of Watergate wasn't told. And Ronald Reagan wants to reward Howard Baker. This is what I say, crime does pay, the cover-up pays. Howard Baker would be rewarded for possible vice presidency, if it isn't Connolly, because he's protected the Howard Hughes Empire and the investigations on that case, as well as the links of Watergate to Dallas. The Hughes Empire, that mysterious Hughes Empire, whatever it is, whoever it is, because I can't call it Howard Hughes, has been combined with the CIA and the Mormon Church members for many years and has decided who became our president in each election. As early as 1946, Richard Nixon was flown out to California while he was still in the uniform of the Navy and met with Howard Hughes and was put into office to run for president, and not for president, he ran for House of Representatives in 1946. The bill for the Central Intelligence Agency was passed in 1947, and Richard Nixon was there as a member of the House to vote aye. And the same people who wanted Richard Nixon for president were very open in documents and statements that the man they wanted for president of the United States was Paul LaSalle, P-A-U-L-A-X-A-U-L-T, now senator, and now manager of Ronald Reagan's campaign and former governor of Nevada. The switch was made evidently by the hierarchy somewhere along the line that Ronald Reagan would be their front man, just like Richard Nixon wasn't their front man. They've got a better one this time because he's an actor and he doesn't sweat like Nixon would sweat. And he was good at radio and TV and on the silver screen. And Paul LaSalt is the man behind Ronald Reagan. He could become the Bebe Rebozo and the Al Belknap of the Reagan position, holding his secret little island meetings where Reagan would fly off and the secret funding would continue and the political payoffs would. I'm not saying it would necessarily happen that way, but because it happened in the past, it has to be investigated how it happened in the past, so it can't happen in the present where Reagan goes to if he's elected to his little compound. And these same kind of people with unlimited money, skimming money and so forth, are behind this operation. LaSalt brought Howard Hughes and his Mormon mafia to Nevada. He welcomed them. He's been close to the Hughes Empire. He manages Reagan's campaign, and he has helped Reagan suggest that John Conley, as I say, be their vice president, and not Senator Howard Baker or Mr. Simon. Conley, as I say, was president at the time that Mormon will was found and the intertangling of the money and who would gain. It's perfectly obvious that the expose of this will should be fingerprinted, and everyone who was present in the room should be fingerprinted and locate who deposited the will that day and who wrote it. But I'm sure they may declare it a forgery, but they won't go after who wrote it. Nobody has the nerve to say that this will was possibly planted or altered or forged or the proximity of Conley there, but I say it, and I think, just like Bullet 399, it should be reiterated. When Lillian Castellano, the researcher I mentioned before, called Noah Dietrich in Los Angeles to talk about the handwriting expert that was going to be used on this will regarding the forgery, they called in Gordon Shanklin, an FBI man who was a photographic expert in the John Kennedy assassination and not a handwriting expert at all. The same team is brought in continuously, who were brought in the Kennedy murder and covered it up to make allegations about these various documents. Dietrich didn't call Bell back to Lillian Gordon Novell, called her, and she nearly fell off of her chair. She asked him why he was taking the calls for Noah Dietrich. And Gordon Novell, the friend of Perman Deck's employees and Lee Harvey Oswald and Charles Colson, said, "Noah Dietrich works for me. He's on the board of directors of my firm." So Dietrich and Novell are partners. Novell has been with counterintelligence and would be close to Dietrich through this whole operation of the will and the money, and there's Ronald Reagan sitting in the middle of all this without the crime of possibly who murdered Howard Hughes, who kidnapped him. We certainly know he died. If it was Hughes, somebody died of a disease that was quoted called negligence. But these questions of homicide, kidnapping are wide open. They're no different than the murders on the Indian reservations and the Indians in the jails, and they're not investigated by the FBI. And meanwhile, Howard Baker and covering up the Watergate and the Hughes connections and John Conley move into a position of power. The story of the Hughes empire should be broken up before a man like Paul LaSalt, handling the money for Ronald Reagan, makes the decisions of the vice president or moves Reagan as a front man into power. We hear a saying so often, no more Watergates. Watergate is behind us. The last big brahu of, I think, the American political system is the Watergate-Conley or the Ford-Conley connections. This is the ultimate goal of Watergate, and this is why it's so important to vote for Mr. Carter, Jimmy Carter, even if he has Frank Church as his vice president. I hope he won't. Very important to go out and vote and register and get behind that, because the Republican side this year is the last segment of the Watergate, and they're all in key positions, and the same power they had in 72, I really feel is ready to pull punches now to maintain power over the intelligence community. Gerald Ford sent a letter to Senator Church when investigations were going to be presented to the American people. This is a quote. It was from November 5th, 1975, in the New York Times. I'm writing to urge the Select Committee not to make public the report on the subject of assassinations. It is my opinion the public disclosure now of information I provided to the committee will result in serious harm to national interest and endanger individual lives. I stated publicly, when the allegations were published, the very idea that any person or organization in the United States government could consider assassination is unacceptable, it is abhorrent and not acceptable. And I know you share my views, it's unacceptable, but we must not print the truth to the American people. And then, in turn, Gerald Ford would continue having a man for vice president who covers up along with them. There's another article from the Los Angeles Times. Gerald Ford seeks power to increase secrecy. This is in February of 76. He asked for tighter control over the federal government, over the agencies, and increase the secrecy and suggest a strong prosecution. He says, I wouldn't rule out that Attorney General Edward Leavy prosecute editors, reporters, and publishers and have them called before grand juries and order them to identify their news sources. This is identical to what Nazi Germany did. So that, up along the line of Watergate, another presidential man considered is Senator Howard Baker. As I say, he didn't go into any of the material important things in Watergate, such as the death of Mary Jo Kopechne, the shooting of George Wallace that knocked him out of the electoral process, the poisoning of J. Edgar Hoover, the plane crash of Dorothy Hunt. He didn't do any of that, even though Charles Colson, president's attorney, said he thought Dorothy Hunt was killed in an espionage operation, that she was murdered. Baker covered up the information of the Hughes connections, the same people that are funding Ronald Reagan. Now, here's a direct conflict of interest. Senator Howard Baker covered up the funding connections of the Hughes empire to Watergate and to the people running for office that would touch Ronald Reagan directly. And then Reagan, in turn, says, I would take you as my running mate. Senator Baker received from CIA Director William Colby documents, which I've read on the air and at various lectures, stating very clearly how the CIA interfered with elections in 1972, how they falsified who the agents were, diverted the attention, and yet Baker didn't prosecute any person. He didn't represent prosecution. Senator Howard Baker closed his Senate Select Committee. He didn't have to close it. He said, I stop. This is the tip of the iceberg. So like the Warren Commission or the Rockefeller Commission, the Baker Committee, this puts these people into position eligible to run for vice president of the United States or even president of the United States. They meet the test and they pass it. Baker covered up all of the Howard Hughes money, which could possibly run. It was alleged $10 million of illegal money to buy off members of Congress, the presidents, and disclosed openly, FBI report disclosed that this illegal activity was going on, and Baker closed it up, Senator Howard Baker. And Ronald Reagan visits him in his private home and comes out and says, I will take John Conley or Senator Howard Baker. As far as Secretary of the Treasury William Simon, he's considered as the third choice of Ronald Reagan. And yet the same conflict of interest comes because Mr. Simon has done everything to hide the money of the Hughes connections, of the fact that that was not Howard Hughes, that was buried in Houston, Texas. April the 5th, that body that was cashed in, he closed investigations of the Bahama money that was linked to Gulf Oil, to the Richard Nixon campaign, to Hugh Scott, to the IRS, the close connection of the money washing that goes from Vegas down to the Bahamas. And members of our former members of our Justice Department are involved in these money washings and have set up operations in the Bahamas. And that is the job of the IRS. And yet Secretary of the Treasury William Simon is suggested as vice president material for Ronald Reagan, even though the IRS gave special benefits. I could do a whole program that on the special benefits to the Hughes Corporation that have kept the American people from having between $500 million to $100 billion in tax money. We don't have money for health or schools and many things that this country needs. I can't even run them all down. And $500 million to $1 billion benefit has been given to the used people, a tax break. As late as February of this last year, February 1976, instead of Mr. Simon going down and demanding to see that Howard Hughes was even alive, this scabby 80-pound body with a bleeding head tumor and kidney disease is going to be transferred from the Bahamas to Mexico. And at that time, when this non-existent, non-functioning human being with no fingerprint proofs that he's alive is being moved, William Simon,